Good evening. I'm Roberta Scott, sitting in for Jerry Pippin. His mysterious illness has returned this weekend, and he asked me at the last minute to sit in for him. I have worked as Jerry's producer of his comedy productions, produced the Las Vegas radio shows and the remote radio shows since 1984, but this is a first. Before we go any further, I would like to thank Jane Swartley, Jerry's web producer, for all of her work this weekend. She edited and worked up 4 shows this weekend while Jerry was being treated. It is because of her that this work has gone on. The new shows are up, thanks to Jane. Our first guest this evening is Grant Cameron. Good evening, Grant.
Good evening, Roberta. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm just fine. Well, Jerry and I have known you for many years, but in the past few years, you've turned your research interests to the involvement and actions of the presidents of the United States in the UFO problem. Well, we know you've made numerous trips to the National Archives and most of the various presidential archives looking for presidential UFO material. So what's new and juicy, what kind of new and juicy information can you tell us this evening?
Well, I'm working on a couple of new items. First, I'd like to say I'm sort of honored to be interviewed by you because, as you said, we've sort of run into each other. You and Jerry did all the conferences. I've been to all different conferences, and you were always there. And the one thing I'd like to talk about is women in ufology to start, because it ties into something that I've just gotten involved in that I think is important. And people on the outside really don't realize that there's a lot of women who play significant roles in ufology, and you've played yours. And the other thing that people don't realize, I think even people in the UFO community don't realize, is that there's sort of a difference between women and men when it comes to what they're interested in. And if you go to conferences, you'll see this kind of stuff. That if you like, for example, if you go to the men are into hardware, bodies, and crafts and stuff like that. So if you go to the Crash Saucer conference, and you and Jerry have done that a couple of times, you'll see like 3 women in the room, and the other couple hundred are men, and the only 3 women are the women who couldn't get, you know, rides to go to the mall. That women really aren't interested in that kind of stuff. They're more interested in the spiritual and the psychic aspect of it. So if you go to like a big conference like a UFO Congress, you'll see the experiencer sessions that they have every morning at the conference. The place is absolutely jammed, and the vast majority of it is women. And women are into this sort of spiritual aspect or this psychic aspect, experiencers, all this kind of stuff that men really haven't followed. And I think there is a definite connection between the two, that the two should come together in ufology. We've sort of left this off, and that's where some of my new research is coming in. And the way I got the idea was I was at UFO Congress this past year, and all the speakers there was this sort of undertone in all the speeches of consciousness, of spirituality and consciousness. For example, Stephen Greer, he's always talking about, you know, consciousness and UFOs. David Sereda and Stan Romick talking about the equations that are coming in his head from the aliens, and Whitley Strieber, of course, the interaction, the mental interaction with the aliens, and Yvonne Smith. But the one that really sort of got me was Colin Andrews. And Colin Andrews is sort of a you'd think is a sort of a hard doing the crop circle stuff. He's sort of the expert on crop circles, done this for a number of years, and he did a study for Rockefeller. And the study showed that 80% of all crop circles are hoaxed. And he made a lot of enemies in the UFO community by that. And his lecture is what sort of got me sort of inspired. It was like almost like a shower of ideas that came to me. And it just sort of exploded in my head, all these ideas that I'd known my whole life through my 35 or 37 years studying ufology, that all sort of came into my head. And Colin Andrews came out and talked about now the crop circles that you have, crop circles that are done by aliens, the 20%, and the other 80% are hoaxed. And everybody says, well, you know, that's not alien related. And his new theory is that, yes, that's alien related too, that the investigations that he did and all the work that he did actually showed that the vast majority of the hoaxers that he talked to and got to know that were hoaxing these crop circles were talking about the fact that it would appear in their head, what kind of crop circle to hoax. And he and Colin Andrews brought up a couple of examples that basically showed that the aliens are probably behind this too, that they're putting the idea into these people's heads. So at that point, I got this, as I said, this shower of experiences from the past that showed that consciousness is a critical part of the UFO phenomena. It's not nuts and bolts. That consciousness, the psychic aspect, may be the part of the UFO mystery that we, if we actually put it together and figure out how it works, that's what it's all about. And in the examples that I can quote to you from this, the stuff that shows that this is a critical component that, that ufology has missed is, as you know, I started as a researcher and I had some sightings back in 1975 and I did the, you know, the investigation. I talked to people and stuff and I sort of got depressed because the book didn't get published and people really didn't care about the sightings. And I went to the, to study the Canadian government at that point. And one of the critical things that came out of there, this research on flying saucers by the Canadian government was done by a guy by the name of Wilbert Smith. And Wilbert Smith is famous in the UFO community. Everybody knows this document. It's called the Top Secret Document. It's one of the only legitimate top secret documents that's been declassified on UFOs. It was a document that he wrote to the Deputy Minister of the Department of Transport in Canada. And what the document basically said is this. It said, I went to the United States. I made a trip. I talked to U.S. officials in the United States. And what I was told was the following things. Flying saucers exist. It's the most highly classified subject in the United States, rated 2 points higher than the hydrogen bomb. And there's a small group headed by Vannevar Bush that is trying to figure out what's going on. And I and every other researcher for a number of years has passed this document around and saying, this is an important document. This is the important part of the document. And everybody, including myself, left out the very next line in the document. And it's critical to remember, this is December of 1950. Smith says, and I was also told that there's other things that the officials think are connected to flying saucers, such as mental phenomena, and that if we, the Canadians, have anything to exchange, they're willing to exchange credentials and talk to us about it. So in 1950, Wilbur Smith immediately said mental phenomena was part of the flying saucer phenomena. The reason that's so important is a lot of people in ufology don't realize, they think that things are always the way now that they were in the past, and it's not true. Things were different in the past. And in 1950, there were no contacts with aliens. There was no contactees. There was no abductees. There was nothing. So the fact that in 1950, before any of the contactees, Adamski and the rest of them, showed up on the scene, the American government already knew that mental phenomena was a part of the UFO phenomena. And we sort of just disregard that. And Smith was an important guy because he said he was talking to U.S. officials. So that's number one, a critically high-level person. The next high-level person that we ran up, and this popped into my head after the conference, that I knew about this and I'd heard it and I didn't really realize the significance of it, was when we went from the Wilbur Smith thing, we got led through a scientist in Washington, D.C. to Dr. Eric Walker. And that was a book that I did called UFOs, MJ-12 and the Government. I wrote it in 1989. We published it. MUFON was the first book MUFON published. And that told the story of Dr. Eric Walker, who was a guy that a scientist squealed on. There was a scientist by the name of Dr. Robert Sarbacher, who said that in 1950 he had been invited to a series of briefings at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base with regard to the crash of a flying saucer. Stanton Friedman interviewed him in 1983, and Stanton said, well, did you go? And he said, no, I was busy, I couldn't go. And Stanton said, well, who went? And so he would name off different people, and all the people he was naming off were dead. Stanton says, well, can't you remember anybody who might still be alive? And he said, well, there was this guy in Pennsylvania. He was real arrogant. He went to all the meetings. He thought he knew everything. When we tracked it down, it appeared to be Dr. Eric Walker. We phoned him. He said, yes, I was there. So what? So it led to an 8-year investigation of Dr. Eric Walker. Now, being men doing this investigation, we're asking about the hardware. What about the notes from the meeting? What about the aliens? What about this? What about that? And in the middle of these 8 years of interviews by 6 different researchers from around the world, one of the researchers in the United Kingdom was interviewing him. And suddenly in the middle of the interview, Walker stopped him and said, let me ask you a question. And Henry Azzedal, who was doing the interview, said, what? And he said, how good is your ESP? How good is your sixth sense? And he said, well, no, why does that matter? He said, unless you understand that, unless you have the mind of Einstein, you're not going to get anywhere. So that was the second thing that occurred to me just recently, that this, we had been told about this 20 years ago when Walker said this is a critical part of the phenomena. ESP, how good is your ESP? The third one is, if you recall, and a lot of your people on your show or listen to your show will know this story. Ben Rich, who ran Skunkworks, who is the sort of the apex of the black world, in 1993, just before he died, Ben Rich gave a lecture to UCLA graduates, and there's a couple of engineers. One was Jan Hartson, who was a MUFON, top MUFON guy in California. Ben Rich is giving this speech, and during this speech, he says, we found the mistake in the equation. We now have the technology to take ET home. So Hartson and one other engineer that I've talked to in the last couple of days both said, yes, this happened. We heard him say this, that they had the technology to take ET home. Ben Rich finishes the speech, and Ben Rich is leaving the auditorium. Jan Hartson runs after him, and Jan Hartson says to him, Ben, how are UFOs, what kind of propulsion do UFOs use? And Jan, and then Ben says to him, let me ask you a question. How does ESP work? And Jan Hartson says, well, that just shows that everything in the universe is connected. And Ben Rich turned around and said, now you know how UFOs work. So this critical aspect that women have always had in ufology, that they've been tied into this sort of thing, and men have sort of missed, if you put it together, if you put the hardware of men and the psychic and the spiritual aspect that women are interested in when they go to conferences, then I think we can solve the problem. I think that's one of the things we have, is that we're going in two different directions. We're doing two different things. So it's a critically important thing that women are involved, and that it may be women in ufology who lead us to the answer of what's actually going on.
Wow. I think you're really right on. I really do.
Yeah, you've got a lot of conferences, so you see that as well.
Yes.
There's a division between men and women as to what kind of lectures they go to.
Right, because, you know, women love crop circles, orbs, ESP.
Yeah.
All of this.
Thing. Like a lot of the experiencer things, if you go in the morning, I remember the one this year, the one experience, Yvonne Smith was running the experiencer thing. It happens at 8 o'clock in the morning. And apparently the one morning you couldn't get in the room. There were so many people in the room, and the vast majority of them were women. That's something that appeals to women. And I think we have to sort of look at that aspect and say, and I'm saying right now, this is possibly the most critical part. And in fact, Jerry and I have talked about Ronald Pandolfi. And Ronald Pandolfi supposedly runs the UFO desk. But my understanding is it's not called the UFO desk. It's called the phenomenology desk. Phenomenology is UFOs, paranormal phenomena, remote viewing, psychic phenomena, ghosts, all this kind of stuff. And the whole thing is that there is an aspect of reality that we don't understand that controls all this phenomenology stuff. And as soon as we understand this spiritual, and Stephen Greer would say it's consciousness. A lot of people would say it's consciousness, understanding what consciousness is. Once you understand that, then you can start to figure out what UFOs is about. And the top people in the field, these top three people that I've referenced, have said that's how it works. And they've said it over 30 years. It's not something where, you know, they all heard each other say it. This is something that top people have indirectly told us. This is the answer.
Well, I've always felt that ESP has something to do to unlock all of the mysteries. But I just think this is remarkable. It really is. And I'm so glad that you have put all this together so that we can start moving forward and just see how ESP works and take ET home.
Yeah, take ET home. I'm working on I'm giving a lecture in Philadelphia in September, and I'm putting the whole thing together. The other aspect that all these people have talked about is mathematics as well. That I'm putting this all together. I think it's one of the most important lectures I've ever given. I've given a lot of lectures about, interesting stuff about what the presidents knew, and little, you know, like a National Enquirer type lectures where you have these interesting little stories. But I think this is in terms of actually trying to put together what's actually going on. This, I think, is my best attempt to actually explain what's going on. And in terms of this mathematics, all three of these people have said the same thing. Wilbur Smith said, we don't have the mathematics to handle this. And Dr. Eric Walker said the same thing, broke it off in one interview and said, how good is your mathematics? And this guy from England that was doing the interview said, well, as good as any physicist. And that's when he said, unless you have the mind of Einstein, you aren't going anywhere to try to figure this thing out. And Ben Rich had the same thing. The problem in the math, we have a problem with the mathematics, and we figured out the problem. And the other person that had this mathematics thing was in 2004, General Wesley Clark, who was a four-star general with the Unified Command, who's one of the people who should be briefed on crashed flying saucers. He was running for president. He was running for the Democratic Party. And at one point, he was leading the Democratic side. And he was in New Hampshire, and he was asked by Jay Buckley, who was a space shuttle astronaut. He said, General, what's your vision of space? And General Wesley Clark started talking about the fact that, oh, you know, I wanted to be an astronaut and my eyesight wasn't that very good. And therefore, I went into the Army and I moved my way up and I became a four-star general. But actually, I really wanted to be an astronaut. And then he said, I believe that we can go past the speed of light. I believe that we can do it. And it was just bizarre. He said, I've argued with physicists about it. I believe we can go past the speed of light. So here we have a four-star general with a unified command who's saying he believes we can go past the speed of light. And I got a message that said he's been briefed on crash flying saucers. So I immediately put out the alert in 2004, all through the United States, to as many people as I could, as he made his way around the country campaigning for president, to say, ask him the briefing question. The same question that I asked Dick Cheney, have you been briefed on the subject of flying saucers? And he wasn't asked until the very end. 2 days before the end of the election, he was heading to Roswell, New Mexico, because they always go to Roswell, same as Obama, which we'll talk about in a minute. They all go because New Mexico is a swing state, so all the presidential candidates end up in New Mexico and Roswell to try to get that state. The 2 days before, Dr. David Rudiak from California runs into him in Reno, Nevada. He's giving a lecture, and Rudiak decides, I'm going to ask him the briefing question. Wesley Clark makes the presentation, and Rudiak comes up to him and says, General, you talked about the fact that you thought we could go past the speed of light, that you've argued with physicists, and you really believe we can go past the speed of light. I'd like to ask you, General, have you ever been briefed on the subject of flying saucers? And Wesley Clark said, I know some stuff. In fact, I'm going to Roswell tonight. Rudiak came back with the briefing question again. So he said, so you have been briefed. And he said, we have to work out our own mathematics. This thing keeps coming up. It pops up. And because these are high, high ranking people, these aren't people from, you know, underground Area 51 with unnamed names. These are people who are actually, you can get their verified background, that these are people who should know what's going on. And they all talk about ESP and they all talk about mathematics. And in fact, Ben Rich said that he had, that the Skunk Works had hired a whole series of theoretical mathematicians to work on problems, that they realized this was the whole crux of the problem was mathematics behind the UFO thing and the consciousness thing. So those are the two things, and I'm going to talk about it in Philadelphia. I'm going to put it all together, and I think you'll see it's very unified, that this is something that the intelligence community has known about since the 1950s, because we play the game in ufology. We really don't know what's going on. You know, we should get the government to set up a study. We should get science to set up a study. It's garbage. They know what's going on. They've always known what's going on, especially if you get a document in 1950 that says they knew mental phenomena was involved. They understand a lot more than people are giving them credit for.
Yes. I've always felt that it has to do with numbers, that numbers are very important in the messages that we've been sent. I think we've been sent many messages, but it's in numbers.
Yeah.
And the mental phenomena and numbers, I think that's where we're going to get the answers.
Yeah, and
unfortunately, I'm not good at the numbers.
Well, that's what Walker said. Unless you have the mind of Einstein, you are not going to make it anywhere in this field. And he said, give it up. Go study something else. Forget it. You're not going to get anywhere. And that's why he didn't want to talk. He just kept saying, forget about it. Do something else. Find another hobby to do. Something else. You're not going to get anywhere. It's too complex. You can't get at it. And Ben Rich is saying the same thing. Wilbur Smith is saying the same thing. They're all basically saying the same thing over 60 years and top-rated people. And as I was talking before, there's a lot of indications now that they actually – Everybody knows that it's just a classified subject. I was talking to Jerry when we were going to do this interview. It was about the Goldwater papers that I'd at the Congress when I was in. I went to Phoenix early. I was in Phoenix for a month, and I went to look at the Goldwater papers. And there was indications there that Barry Goldwater, who was a senator from Arizona for a number of years, who had actually been the Republican candidate for president against Lyndon Johnson in 1964, that he had this lifelong interest in UFOs. And I went there, and I was looking at his collection of UFO letters that he had written people, and they run from 1966 through to 1996. And there's indications in those letters that Goldwater didn't know what was going on. He talks up till 1981, and I discussed this with Jerry, this weird sort of pattern that appeared in these letters, that from 1966 to 1981, Goldwater always talks about the meeting with LeMay. He's famous for around 1964 when he was running for president. He goes to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and he said at one point he was getting 100 requests a year to get inside what was called the Blue Room. And the rumor of the Blue Room was it was where they kept the UFO hardware, it's where they kept the bodies and all this kind of stuff. And so General Curtis LeMay was a friend of his. And General Curtis LeMay was head of the Air Force at the time, he was sitting on the Joint Chiefs of Staff as part of the Air Force. And Goldwater goes to him and says, General, you've got this very secret room. I'd like to get in this room. And Goldwater says to him, look, I can't go in. You can't go in. Don't ever bring up the subject again, or I'll have you court-martialed. So this is one general telling another general, I'll court-martial you if you ever bring up the subject again. So Goldwater, in these 66 to 96 letters, all the way up to 1981, he talks about the fact that he had this meeting with LeMay and what happened in the meeting. And then he says, other than that, I know nothing more than the man on the street. 1981, it all changes. In 1981, he gets a letter from a ham radio operator in Australia. This ham radio operator asks him a question. It's not about UFOs. It's just a question in the letter. Oh, by the way, what do you think about the material in the Roswell incident? And as I said before, people don't realize that Roswell has only been around since 1980. Before 1980, nobody talked about it. Nobody knew what it was. So 1981, the year after Bill Moore and Berlitz brought out this book called The Roswell Incident, which first described the Roswell story and the witnesses and stuff like that, he says, how accurate is the material in the book? And Goldwater, who said up to 1981, I know nothing more than the man on the street, says to him, some of it's true, some of it's not true. That's as much of an answer as I can give you, so don't push it. Which tended to indicate that as chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee in 1981, he was interested in UFOs. The Roswell book came out. He went and got information on Roswell as the Senate Intelligence Committee chairman, and was given an answer, and is now changed his tune and says, I can't tell you anything more. And if you look at the letters after 1981, he basically says to people, the Air Force, if they covered it up, they did the right thing. And it's always going to remain classified. He makes these statements as if he knows what's going on. It's never going to be released. It's very highly classified, and they did the right thing by covering it up. So here you have a Goldwater who appeared at one point to be told. And the other example that I talked to Jerry that we were going to talk about tonight was the Obama thing, where I wrote an article, and it's on my website, presidentialufo.com, where I wrote an article called, Did Obama Fumble the UFO Cover-Up? The government, since 1947, has always maintained it's not national security. We don't know what's going on. There's nothing to this. And they went as far as last November, Stephen Bassett got a petition on. They got 12,000 signatures on the White House website and forced them to answer the question about, is there ET presence on Earth? So a guy by the name of Phil Larson writes this letter on behalf of the president, and we found out – I filed all the FOIAs. I found out later the president never saw the petition. He had no idea it was even there. It was handled at the office of his science advisor. Phil Larson, inside the science director's office, writes this letter and says, there is no credible evidence. We have no evidence to indicate that there's ET on Earth. So their final position is no credible evidence, have no evidence whatsoever that ET exists. So a month ago, Barack Obama goes to New Mexico. It's campaign year. Everybody goes to New Mexico in campaign year. He's pushing the oil industry because the gas prices are high. He's going to make this speech on oil to say he's the president for low oil prices. He goes to Roswell, New Mexico, and he makes this bizarre statement. First of all, he sets up a joke. When you go to Roswell, New Mexico as the president or whoever, you always have to have a UFO joke because it's a Roswell crowd. So he makes the joke. He says, you know, as I walk around, I get lots of questions from 9 and 10-year-old kids. And the main question they want to know is, Mr. President, have you been to Roswell? And is it true what they say? And I always look at him and I say, son, if I were to tell you that, I'd have to kill you. And that was an expression that he'd used once before when he was asked about, is there a presidential book? Is there a secret book that the president has? And a reporter asked him, and he used that same line, if I told you, I'd have to kill you. And it's a joke. He got the whole, everybody laughed about, you know, him killing these 9, 10-year-old kids. So the joke is there. And then he transitions. You can see if you watch the video, and if you go to Obama, Roswell, you Google that, you look at the video, you will see that the joke is over, everybody laughs, and then Obama transitions into the speech, and he says, so we're going to keep our secrets here. And he basically says, we're going to keep the Roswell secret a secret. It basically counters everything the government has been saying for the last 65 years. It basically says, Roswell is secret, it's classified, and we are going to keep the secret. We're not going to talk, which means Obama knows what's going on as well, which is the question that I've worked on, because I worked on the presidents for 15 years. It's always that question. Does the president know? Doesn't the president know? And it would appear from Obama that Obama knows enough to know it's classified. He may be not told the details, but he knows what's going on. The government knows what's going on. There's no game. They know what's happening. They're working on it, and it appears they may actually have gotten to the other end of the problem. They may have the technology to take ET home. It's just classified, and it can be used for war. They don't care where the aliens come from. They want the technology, and that's the end of the story. They're not going to disclose because it's military technology.
So after being in all of the presidential libraries and everything, do you think there has been presidential involvement in the topic of psychic phenomena?
Absolutely. I think, I was going to put it on my website. I haven't got it yet. There is an actual direct piece of evidence that proves that they were. One of the things I had gone, and I'd gone to Hal Puthoff, as you know, ran the remote viewing program, and for the CIA, and I'd asked Hal Puthoff, I said, was the president briefed on remote viewing? And he said, up to Bush vice president, yes. Now, I don't know who did the briefing, but if Hal Puthoff says yes. The important fact of that is that if you, and I've run around to the different presidential libraries, I've been to all of them, if you look up UFOs, you will think the president has never discussed it. You will think it has never been brought up in the White House. There is nothing, literally nothing in any presidential library on UFOs. So we would say, well, it's not, you know, nothing happened. They're telling the truth. There's no cover up. But the fact is, there's nothing in the presidential libraries either on remote viewing. Absolutely nothing. No reference, no documents, nothing. But we know for a fact that the president was briefed on remote viewing. And Jimmy Carter has just come out. His latest book was, I think, called Carter's Diary or My Diary or something. And people can look it up and look up in the index, look up remote or psychic phenomena, I think it is. And Jimmy Carter actually talks. And we actually have the dates when he was briefed on the remote viewing program. And he talks about it, and he basically says, there's a story, and Jimmy Carter leaked this story out. And there was some controversy that he actually leaked it. And he was told a story. They had lost. Jimmy Carter tells you know, the cover story. He says that we lost a U.S. two-engine plane in Africa. And the CIA brought in a psychic, and she identified where this plane was. And that we sent the satellite over, and we sent the people in, and it was exactly where this woman said it was. Now, he talks about it in his diary in two different places, and you have to have the date. So, I run back to the presidential library, and I check the date, and there is no reference whatsoever to anything on remote viewing for that day. And yet, Jimmy Carter, in his diary, talks about being briefed on it on that date. Now, it actually wasn't a plane. It wasn't a two-engine plane. It was a Tupolev T-80, I think it was. It was a Russian bomber that had been converted to an intelligence gathering plane that had gone down. The Americans knew this plane had gone down in Nigeria or one of those countries, and they were scrambling to try to find this plane because it had all this intelligence material on it. And the U.S., why would the U.S. intelligence worry about some two-engine plane? I mean, when you find it, you find it. It's because they were trying to get to this Soviet bomber, this intelligence plane, before the Soviets got to it. And they actually got the plane, and that story is told by all the remote viewing books. If you look in the remote viewing books, they'll tell this story. And it was the remote viewers. There was two. There was a woman at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. This is the one that targeted it. And there was somebody at Stanford Research Institute who also targeted it. And they had it partly in a river about 20 miles from where everybody was looking for it. So the two remote viewers picked up this plane. But Jimmy Carter actually confirms, yes, he was briefed on this. And his words were, it was one of the most dramatic things in his presidency. The most dramatic things he'd ever seen in his presidency was this incident or this experience with psychic phenomena. Now, Jimmy Carter on UFOs, if you see him now, he basically denies UFOs. I mean, he says he doesn't believe ETs have visited the Earth, and he says the thing that he saw might have been a military experiment from some air base 20 miles south or something like that. He's really backpedaling on the UFO thing. But in terms of psychic phenomena, Jimmy Carter does support the idea of the psychic phenomena and the remote viewing, and his wife was extremely interested. That's another thing we know, is Rosalind Carter was extremely interested in remote viewing, and there's the famous story told about Uri Geller, that Uri Geller was invited to a meeting with a dinner with the president and with the first lady, and she was interested in him bending spoons. So Uri Geller is bending these spoons, and Henry Kissinger was sitting on the other side of Uri Geller, and then Uri Geller says something about reading Rosalind Carter's mind or whatever, and then he turned to Kissinger and says, "Do you want me to read your mind?" And Kissinger freaked out. He just sort of backed away. It was like he had so much stuff in his head that he was petrified by this Uri Geller, by this incident that happened. But Rosalind Carter was extremely interested in Uri Geller. She was a very big fan of Uri Geller. So the presidents have this kind of stuff. And as you know, with Ronald Reagan, he and Nancy read the astrology stuff every day. They were extremely interested in psychic phenomena. That's all sort of documented. And the one with that happened in the Clinton administration, I don't know if you know this story or remember this story. A lot of what happens with the president in terms of UFOs or psychic phenomena, you can't bring it near the president. You can't get the president tied into it because it's so damaging. And the proof of that is Nancy Reagan got caught with the astrology thing, and there was when I filed the FOIA at the Reagan Library, there's 2,500 pages of newspaper articles. This was a big story. And Hillary Clinton got caught. Hillary Clinton, the story was that the Clintons were bringing in all these New Age people into the White House. It was a Friday evening thing. They had sort of a – they had would have these sort of a introductory or guest speakers and stuff, and they were bringing these people in. And the one person that they were bringing in who was very close friends with Hillary Clinton was Jean Houston. Now, Jean Houston was a New Age, very high prominent person in New York City, was friends with Rockefeller, and she had this thing that Bob Woodward picked up and put in a book and caused huge embarrassment for Hillary Clinton. And this was this thing, and he called it channeling, and she had to put out a statement, and I've got the statement. I did the FOIA. She put out a statement saying, no, this wasn't channeling. And it was basically she would sit down and Jean Houston would guide this sort of a channeling session, and she was talking to Eleanor Roosevelt, and then she was talking to Gandhi, and then Hillary or Jean Houston was going to get her to talk to Jesus. And at that point, she decided, no, I can't do this. But she had a lot of these sessions with Jean Houston. Now, this became exposed by Woodward in this book, and it caused huge problems. No, she wasn't channeling, and it made the whole White House look crazy. That's crazy First Lady. She's channeling dead people. And so the presidents have been very interested all the way back, if you remember back to the Lincoln days, that Lincoln's wife was having seances. They had lost a child. The Lincolns had lost a child very early, and Lincoln's wife didn't get over it, and they had seances all the time in the White House in the 1860s. So this psychic phenomena thing is something that goes through all the presidents. It appears that the presidents are kind of into that kind of stuff. Especially their wives, they're into this sort of paranormal stuff, and the wives are always interested in this channeling thing. There's a number of U.S. administrations where the first ladies were having seances and stuff like that in the White House. This is very common.
Wow. Well, my goodness. So, what do you think about this whole disclosure issue in a paragraph or so?
Okay. I say it's up to ufology. I don't think it's up to science. I don't think it's up to the government to disclose. I think it's up to the UFO community. We should be happy that we've had a part in this very important event in history. It is up to us to disclose this. It's not up to somebody to raise the white flag and get it out. And I say about disclosure, when it's time for disclosure, it's time for disclosure. Then it'll happen. Not until we've done on our lessons, until we've done the work. Every social and political movement that has had a bad issue like UFOs, an issue that nobody wanted to deal with, whether it was gay rights, women's right to vote, AIDS, civil rights, every one of those movements that had these ugly issues that nobody wanted to deal with, they have forced the issue. And when they put enough pressure on the government, then everybody joins sides and says, oh, I was always with you. It's not until the UFO community puts enough pressure and does the work. It's not up to science, not up to anybody. It's up to you and I to get the message out, to put the pressure on, to get the word out. Disclosure is up to us, not to the government, not to anybody else. This is ours. It's not up to the media. Our game. It's up to us to do.
Now, if people want to visit your website, could you tell us what your website address is?
Website is presidentialufo.com. And all my latest articles are there on the front page. And then if you go to articles, on the right-hand side, there's a thing on articles that has some of the big articles that I've written, and it gives you sort of an overview of all the type of things that I've done. And then, of course, there's the different chapters on the various presidents if you're doing research on a president. I've tried to collect all the stories on all the presidents, so all that stuff is there. But I'm more into the aspect of trying to find out what this is all about now rather than the stories about the presidents. That's there, but I think the more important stuff is in the articles.
Right. I know that you have the paper Presidential UFO Audio Story that contains 60 or more embedded UFO audio clips of the presidents and their aides, or people talking about the presidents and UFOs.
Yeah, and there are some interesting ones there. We've tried to collect, that's the thing, tried to collect all the audios of the presidents talking about it, all the videos, and So it's an interesting site. It's a pretty big site. If people are there, they'll realize that it's a huge, massive site that has a lot of links, and it can take you months to go through it. But I think there's some significant stuff there that people would find interesting and revealing. It's hard research. It's just it's not a lot of speculation. It's basically research.
You know, I was interested in the signatures on the WhiteHouse.gov petition. Why do you think we haven't been able to get enough signatures on that?
Well, I think it's basically, again, it comes up to the UFO community to get the information out. We did on the first one, and one of the FOIs that I had filed was the first one required 5,000 signatures. And then they moved it to 25,000 signatures. And I think part of that was to block the UFO signatures, the UFO petitions from getting through. And I filed, I said, well, one of the FOIs, I said, I want all the information, the details, why the White House changed from 5,000 to 25,000 signatures. Unfortunately, part of the government or the part of the White House that runs it isn't part of the FOIA. So they just basically say we don't have anything. I asked the wrong department, so I can't really ask them. But I think now we have a problem of sort of people that are sort of burnt out by petitions. But as I said, the problem is not so much that the government is not doing their job or the media, it's the UFO community isn't doing our job, that we are sort of, we like to go to conferences, we like to listen to people speak, but when it comes to the actual advocacy, we really don't do anything. The most people that we've ever had outside the White House protesting for UFO disclosure was in the 1990s, was 19 people. The UFO community is very passive, really not very radical. You even have the Wall Street movement where they didn't even know what they were protesting about, and they were able to get 30,000 people. It's a matter of knowing how to get it. It's a matter of knowing how movements work and how to generate, how to get these people. And the only real radical we ever had in the UFO community was the story of Laura Johnston back in the 1990s. And she went on a hunger strike to get Bush to come clean on UFOs. She went on a 42-day hunger strike, and I knew her in California. I was writing articles on while this was going on, and she was basically ridiculed by the UFO community. You're making us look bad. What are you doing? Are you stupid? You're not doing a Gandhi thing. And she was just ridiculed. So when I went to California to see her at the end of the thing, I was there 2 days after she ended the hunger strike. I said, Laura, why did you end the hunger strike? She said, I just came to the conclusion that if the UFO community didn't give a damn, why should I die for them? Because she was just ridiculed by the UFO community. The UFO community is very passive. We're not very aggressive. We're not very skilled at getting protests and getting stuff together. And that's where we have to work on that. We have to get the message out. We have to work on getting people more interested. And part of the problem is it's not a money issue. So, you know, I said one of the best things that could happen is gas to go to $20 a gallon. Then people would get more radical about the UFO issue, that we got to do something about this. But as long as gas is cheap and you've got a job and stuff, we can drill another oil well. It's an interest thing. It's a hobby. It's an interesting sort of subject, but it's not something that I'm going to go and demonstrate. I'm going to really put some time in or do this kind of stuff. It's for a lot of people in the UFO community, it's still just a hobby. It's interesting. It's interesting to listen to. But in terms of advocacy, there's really not that many people. There's Steve Bassett and a few other people who dedicate their lives to it. But other than that, there's really not that many dedicated people to advocacy for UFO disclosure.
Mm. Now, I'm going to ask you a wild question.
Go.
Do you think remote viewing was used in locating Osama bin Laden?
I would say it is. It was. Even if they didn't, I'm sure they used it. There's a story told that, and I've told this story, that Ronald Pandolfi, who Jerry and I have talked about a number of times, who's the sort of the noted head of the phenomenology desk, is very proud of the fact that he shut down the remote viewing program, that he shut this thing down. The reason I think the remote viewing program was shut down was because Jim Mars was coming out with a book. And Jim Mars had all the names and he had all the stories and he was coming out with a book. And that book was blocked. Jim Mars will tell the story. That book was blocked just before they shut down the remote viewing program. If that book had come out, they would have been stuck with the remote viewing program because Jim Mars would have brought it out. And then they would have had to say, yes, we have the program. What they did was they shut the program down. Pandolfi shut the program down. Then they said, oh, we discovered it didn't work. It's a bunch of nonsense. Then they let the book come out. Then you can say, well, yeah, we had it, but it was a waste of time. But if you get caught with the program active, you don't. Now, it's not they shut the program down. What they do is they take the program. The security has been violated by Jim Maher's book coming out. What they do is they shut the program down and go deep black. And Gary Beckham and a number of other people have detailed the fact that the NSA is involved. And the NSA has showed pretty good evidence that they are now sort of in charge of this program. Now, if you have the remote viewing program, if you ran it for 20 years and it worked and you had some very successful hits, as Jimmy Carter showed, that why would you not use it even if it only worked 1% of the time? So you get 100 different hits, one of them is going to be right. Even if it had any 1% chance, they're going to use it, because what does it cost? The intelligence community will always do something to move it on, because the Russians are working on it, the Chinese are working on it. You've got to work on it, even though you may think it doesn't work very good or it's not right. So, yes, they definitely tried. Now, what success they had, but they would have been crazy not to try it. If it worked to find this plane in Africa under Jimmy Carter, it's going to work to find Osama bin Laden, and they've probably put it in front of all their big problems. It's just the problem that it's not that good in terms of it's not 100% reliable. So who knows what their success was, but definitely the intelligence community is not stupid. I mean, if you can gain something by doing it, they're going to try it.
Well, very, very interesting, and I'm looking forward to seeing your work. Now, will you be appearing at any conferences in the next few months?
The only one I'm doing for sure is the one in Philadelphia. That's September 28th to 29th. There may be one in Arizona, but nothing's been confirmed. I've had sort of a lot of tentative offers, but the one in Philadelphia, and I'm always at every conference. Most of the conferences I travel around, because I like to hear everybody else. People do a lot of research, and there's some good speakers there, and I pick up a lot just by sitting at a conference and listening to everybody else's research. So I'm generally around, but the only one for sure I'm doing is Philadelphia in September.
Okay. Are there any other things you would like to visit about?
Well, we did the Goldwater. Let's see. The Clinton stuff, I guess I can mention the Clinton stuff. On my website as well, I have a lot of new documents on I've got the Blue Room documents from Ray Patterson. I'm doing all the Clinton material, and I filed all these Freedom Information Act requests with the Clintons. I filed about 100 Freedom Information Act requests. And a lot of them have come back, and I've got the Area 51 files. If you go to my website, you'll see the Bill Clinton Area 51 files, and they actually call the file is called Area 51, even though the U.S. government still will not admit there is an area called Area 51. The file is called Area 51. I have the I filed the big one that's give me all your stuff on UFOs, flying saucers. That's 900 pages, so I've got all that on there. And a lot of that is Stephen Greer stuff. It sort of confirms the fact that Stephen Greer was heavily involved with the Clinton administration. You'll see a lot of Stephen Greer's briefing stuff on there. There's 900 pages of UFO stuff. I've got the documents or all the photographs I got from the ranch, Hillary at the ranch, and I'm still putting those things up. I still have maybe a couple thousand pages of UFO FOIA material from the Clinton administration to put up there, because the Clintons were extremely interested. Bill even said directly to Paul Davids, who had a five-minute conversation with him in 2008, that he's fascinated in the subject. He likes to read this stuff. He's fascinated in it. So they were interested, and they tried to get the story out, the UFO story. They tried to get the Roswell story out in 1993 and were stonewalled by the Air Force. And then that's what led Bill to make the big speech in Belfast, Northern Ireland, where he said, as far as he knew, there was a UFO did not, or a flying saucer did not crash in Roswell, New Mexico. But if they did find alien bodies, they didn't tell me about it, and I want to know. That led to a second Roswell study. So Bill tried to get the answer out. He tried to get the UFO thing out. He declassified hundreds of millions of pages of material, trying to get openness. He was one of the most open presidents in terms of getting stuff out into the open. So I've gotten those documents, and you may find, your people may find some of that stuff very interesting, because the Clintons have a lot of rumored stories. I think my section on the Clintons, if you go to the Clinton section that tells the Clinton story, I think it's 80 pages long. It's a very long narration about the Clintons' involvement and all their officials. And in 2001, I filed the first FOIA with the Science Advisors Office, and I got 1,000 pages of documents, which were the Rockefeller Initiative documents. Documents, which are also on my website. And because I had the Rockefeller Initiative document, I knew all the people in the Clinton administration who had been involved in UFOs, who was involved, what their participation was. So when Clinton left office and his papers went up for FOIA, I filed on all these different people to ask for their files and tried to get this UFO stuff. So that stuff is all pretty interesting, and it's going up at the website. And it's just so much stuff. It's more for a researcher if you want to go through it. Because if you've ever been to an archives, you read through a lot of documents, and you'll see that the documents there, a lot of it is just total garbage. But it's if you go through presidential libraries, you would spend say 3 or 4 days at a library and maybe get 5 or 10 pages of documents. Most of the stuff you're reading is just stuff about everything else, and there's very little there. But I did get the documents, and they're up at the website, so that's something I should mention.
Was there anything about John F. Kennedy?
Well, that was an interesting one. Bill Clinton, if you remember the story back, Bill Clinton, people may not know, Bill Clinton was fascinated with Robert Kennedy. There's a story told, and there's the photograph that when he was very young, he wanted to be president, and he was part of this boys group and actually got to go to Washington, D.C. and sort of manipulated his way to get to the front of the line and actually got to shake Kennedy's hand. And there's this famous photograph of him shaking Kennedy's hand. So he was always fascinated with two people, Elvis Presley and President Kennedy. So when he was in, if you remember back in 1997, Webster Hubble came out with a book. And in that book, he said that Bill Clinton, when he was associate at Justice, he was given two jobs by Bill Clinton. One job was, are there UFOs? The second job that he was given to investigate is, who killed JFK? Which proves that Clinton was interested in UFOs. He was interested in Kennedy, but it proves something even more important. That Clinton was a conspiracy-minded guy, just like the rest of us in UFOs. He didn't believe the UFO story, and he didn't believe that Kennedy was killed by a lone assassin. So he was asking, I want you to go and reinvestigate these two big mysteries. Who killed Kennedy, and are there UFOs? He believed the conspiracy. He believed there was a cover-up. So he goes out and he investigates it. So one of the FOIAs I filed was, I want all documents on the Kennedy assassination. The first and they have not released this yet. The preliminary report that came back to me said there are 2,500 pages of material in the Clinton Library. So Kennedy was reinvestigated by the Clinton administration, and there is at least 2,500 pages of documents.
Wow. Well, in my mind, whenever I think about the first picture, I think of Bill Clinton was shaking hands with President Kennedy. That sticks in my mind. I just think all of it's amazing. Was there anything about Richard Nixon?
In terms of what, his files or?
In his files that had to do with UFO cover-ups or?
No, his
psychic
is similar
phenomena.
To His is similar to all the presidents. There's really not much there. There's an interesting little thing where some girl writes him a letter on UFOs. Like, now you need a petition and 25,000 people to get an answer from the president. Then the president was answering letters in those days. So he actually answered this letter to this little girl on UFOs, and it was we don't know what's going on or, whatever. And he actually sent her a book. And so it's a different period. Nixon, of course, is famous.
Right.
And there are, if you talk to George Filer, if you ever interview George Filer, ask him about this. There are a number of sources to this story. And George Filer's wife is one of the sources. And that's the story about him going to Homestead Air Force Base in Florida. And that he went to Homestead Florida, and he got a car, and he went and picked up Jackie Gleason. Jackie Gleason lived on a golf course just south of Miami, about 20 miles away, and that he took him to Homestead Air Force Base, and he showed them the dead aliens. Now, David Rudiak and I tracked down Jackie Gleason's second wife, who originally was going to tell the, told the story to the National Enquirer in 1983, and we tracked her down, and she was re-interviewed again, and she basically said, yes, I stand by my story, that Jackie Gleason came home, and he was either out with another woman or something serious happened. He was petrified when he came into the house. He was white as a ghost, and he told me this story that, that Nixon had taken him and shown him the dead bodies. And there was a lot of controversy about, oh, Nixon couldn't get away from his security. This is absolute nonsense. The president doesn't get a car and drive off and drive around Air Force bases. And we confirmed absolutely that Nixon did. Nixon did not like his security, and there are a couple of stories of him getting away from his security, and they would have to go and get him from some restaurant or a bar or stuff like that. So we confirmed that part of the story, that Nixon could get away from his security. And the other thing that was important was I tracked, when I went to the Nixon files, I tracked all the times that he'd gone to Key Biscayne, where Nixon had a southern White House. That's where he would hang out. And he would go down there on his vacation. And that was very close to Homestead Air Force Base. Every time he would fly, and he flew there, I can't remember how many times. It was like 100 times during his two presidencies or whatever. It was a lot of times. He would fly down there. He would fly from Washington to Homestead Air Force Base, where this incident supposedly took place. Then he would use, I think it was Army One, the helicopter, would fly him from Homestead to the compound at Key Biscayne. So he flew into Homestead like 75 times or whatever it was, 100 times. He knew Homestead like the back of his hand. So the story has some backing. And Larry Warren tells a story that when he put out the book on Rendlesham, that he was contacted by Jackie Gleason, and Jackie Gleason wanted to meet with him, and that he went to Jackie Gleason's roundhouse in New York, and they shot pool, and they drank scotch. And he said, told me straight to my face, and he's told it to other people, that Jackie Gleason told him, yes, this story's true, that he was there. And as I said, there's a person in a witness that appears at a lecture in Houston that tells the same story. And as I said, George Filer's wife confirms a witness that she talked to, who confirms the story that, yes, this incident did take place, that Nixon did show the bodies to Jackie Gleason, the comedian.
Wow. Well, Grant, this has been wonderful. And we thank you so very much on being on the show tonight. Thank you, Grant.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, friends, this is George Norton. Don't miss this year's UFO Paranormal Summit in Sacramento, California on June 16th and 17th at the beautiful Crown Plaza Hotel. Come see Stanton Friedman, Project Camelot's Kerry Cassidy, Area 51 legend Norio Hayakawa, Scotty Roberts and Anthony F. Sanchez, critically acclaimed author of the book UFO Highway, and many more of your favorite paranormal and UFO researchers. The UFO Paranormal Summit is bringing together the best minds in paranormal investigative, crypto hunting, and UFO alien hunting fields. For the strange, mysterious, and frightening, nothing will be left unanswered. Happening June 16th and 17th in Sacramento. Go to sacufocon.com, that's sacufocon.com, for more information. Or type UFO Paranormal Summit in your very favorite search engine or Facebook, and you can find it that way. SACUFOCon.com.